Great. Hey everybody, welcome to the Scottsdale Big Book Study, where we will study Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today's date is Saturday, the 27th of April, and my name is Johan, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Falun in Sweden. I will be your host for today, and our brilliant co-hosts for this evening, or sorry, it's evening here, but it's morning maybe where you are. Jay and Dottie, thank you so much for your service for making this meeting possible. If you have any questions during the meeting, please contact either myself or any of the co-hosts by private message in the chat function. The chat function will be disabled until 5 minutes before the question and answer session. Please note that speaker Harlan G will be recorded for the duration of the study. However, the question and answer session which follows will not be recorded. We ask if you can please make sure to keep your microphone at mute, on mute at all times during today's study, and also turn off your video if you are exercising, eating, or if you need to step away from your screen for any reason. During the meeting, we will post a link to our seventh tradition. This money goes towards the cost for our Zoom account, the cost of uploading our recordings, and we also send contribution to our intergroup and WSO. We will post a link to the previous week's recordings. These are available by clicking on the link that will be posted in the chat box. So, ladies and gentlemen, now let's turn over the meeting to the man that we have been waiting for, the man, the myth, the concept,
Okay.
yes, Mr. Harlan G. Take
Right.
away.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You won very much. Thank you. I want to also thank you, Juan, and everybody else for their service. Now, June the 1st, we are changing times. We are going to, on June the 1st, begin this meeting at 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. And the reason that we're going to do that is because we are in perfect time at 10 o'clock in the morning Pacific time for the West Coast, but we are not in good time for the Central time zone and the Eastern time zone. And when I first started this meeting, I just imitated what we had been doing live. And we started it at 10 o'clock Pacific time live. So I've been tinkering for 4 years with moving it much earlier. For one reason or another, I didn't do it. And I had a conversation with somebody who's here today, whose first name begins with an E and lives in the 312-310 area code. And this lady convinced me to start at 7:30 rather than 7. And for some reason, she said it to me, and it just hit me like, yes, this is what to do. So we're going to do it on June the 1st. June the 1st, we move 2.5 hours earlier to 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. It'll be the same Zoom link, it'll be the same everything. We're going to start it 2.5 hours earlier. And this is something we should have done right from the get-go. But to be honest with you, I didn't see what was happening here. I didn't see the big picture. And the big picture was that Zoom was going to be around forever. I thought that this coronavirus, it wasn't even COVID then, it was coronavirus. I thought this coronavirus would come in and leave and it would be done. I was wrong. I was totally wrong. I didn't see what was going to happen. So, June 1st, 7:30 a.m. Pacific time, and it's going to be 9:30 Central time, 10:30 a.m. Eastern time to give people on the East Coast and in the middle of the country much, much more of a chance to attend this meeting, and I hope that they will for sure. We're going to start on page 26, a certain American businessman. We're going to start on page 26, a certain American businessman. But before we do, we're going to talk about the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous gives the impression at times, or the history gives the impression at times, that Bill met Bob, and when they met, AA came out of their ear. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are a product of many, many of God's miracles. We are all miracles of God, but we are also members of an organization, Overeaters Anonymous, that is a miracle of God as well. And one of the things that we see when we study the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our grandfather program, is that Alcoholics Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous did not spring forth because of one event or one person or anything like that. They sprang forth because of many, many miracles in the tapestry of life. One of those miracles occurred in Switzerland. And one of those miracles involved a man by the name of Roland Hazard. And if you've heard me talking about the origin of step two, as I do in Bill's story, I will also tell you that I'm going to repeat most of the highlights here. This chapter, There Is a Solution, is really a chapter that is about step one. I know how to say step one in Italian. It's passo prima. I learned that from going to the Italian meeting on Friday. Passo prima. But anyway, that aside, this is strictly about step two and how it came into the program and how we have the rest of the steps. Earlier in this chapter, There Is a Solution, we read the words that the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. In keeping with that, how we treat the allergy of the body, how we treat the body, is to cease consumption of those alcoholic foods. That's how we treat the body. We treat the mind through a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. And all of the steps that we embark upon from 2 to 12 have nothing to do with food. Food is only mentioned in step one. It's never mentioned again. There's no mention of food in the rest of the steps. Not one time is food mentioned. But we are looking for a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And in order to affect a spiritual awakening, we have to begin with step number two. Now, Roland Hazard was a very successful American businessman, and his family was from Rhode Island, as was he. Roland's family was in the fabric business. They were in the fabric business, and they owned a company called Burlington Mills. And they owned this company along with a major ownership of a company called Allied Chemical, which is traded yet today. If you've ever walked on a carpet in your life, if you've ever walked on a carpet, you probably walked on a Burlington carpet. It is one of the major brands of carpeting in this world, is Burlington. There's also a Burlington garment section, and I'm not sure whether that is directly connected to the Hazard family or not. That's why I don't want to say I don't know, but I'm not sure that it is connected. But be that as it may, the Hazards were very wealthy people, and they came to this country when the country had not been formed yet. They came in the 1600s and settled in Rhode Island. Roland was a drunk. He was a very low bottom drunk. And he made certain attempts at sobriety. He had himself sequestered on a Caribbean island. And on the Caribbean island, the quartermaster, or the person who's in charge of getting supplies to him, was instructed by Roland never, ever, ever to bring him liquor, no matter how much he begged him to. Do not bring him liquor. And he didn't. And for the 1 year, he stayed sober 1 year because there was no liquor. There was no availability. So he stayed sober for a year. He got off the island and immediately went to Miami, Florida, because that's the closest point in the United States from this island. And he goes to Miami. And what does he do in Miami? He finds a bar and he drinks. He hadn't had a drink in a year. Boy, I bet he was thirsty, huh? I mean, he drank water, obviously, or lemonade or whatever you had, but he didn't drink any liquor. Finds a bar and he gets drunk and he stays drunk. And he's disgusted with himself and he says, I got to find something else. Now, in the late 1920s and the early 30s, what we know today as psychiatry was in its relative infancy. We think of psychiatry as being centuries old. It's not. It's not. And the preeminent psychiatrist in the world at that time was Sigmund Freud. Now, money being no object, Roland Hazard decides he is going to seek out the services of Sigmund Freud to try to get him sober through psychoanalysis. But Sigmund Freud wasn't taking on any new patients. So he finds out that the number two man in the world of psychotherapy is a man by the name of Adler. And Adler wasn't taking on any new patients, let alone one whose only quest is to gain sobriety. That just wasn't his thing. And he finds out from Adler that the number three man in the world, in the world of psychotherapy, is a man in Switzerland. I'm thinking of Sweden because of you, one. But a man in Switzerland, Geneva, Switzerland, Zurich, Switzerland, he finds out that the man's name is Carl Jung. Jung is J-U-N-G. Looks like Jung, and you'll hear people mispronounce it as Jung in meetings or Jung. It's Jung. The J sound does not exist in some languages, and the J is pronounced like a Y. So it is Carl Jung, as if it was Y-U-N-G, just like somebody's name that's here from Sweden. They also don't have the J sound either. So that's why you know him as Johan or Yuan. You know, that's why you know him as that. But anyway, that aside, okay. Carl Jung, in 1931, meets Roland Hazard. And in 1931, now there are historical inaccuracies because there are some people who believe that Jung met Roland in 1926. However, most accounts bear out the majority of the accounts bear out that it was in 1931 that Jung meets Roland. Now, Jung believes something that Freud and Adler did not believe. Let's find out what it is, and we're going to get to it today. Let's go to page 26, and let's find out what happened to Roland. Roland is going to tell Ebby. Ebby is going to tell Bill Wilson, and Bill Wilson is going to tell the world. See how that works? Roland told Ebby. Jung told Roland. Jung is going to tell Roland. Roland is going to tell Ebby. And Ebby is going to tell Bill. And Bill is going to tell the world and change the world forever. Let's find out what it is. Let's go to the top of 26. A certain American businessman, Roland Hazard, had good ability, had good sense, high character, had ability, good sense, and high character. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another. Roland had been institutionalized in insane asylums for years, trying to sober up. And sometimes he was institutionalized voluntarily, more often than not, involuntarily, because that's what they did with alcoholics in those days. They threw you in the laughing academy to sober you up. How barbaric was that? Remember, I told you the story of how Ebby was supposed to be remanded to the insane asylum in Vermont at Brattleboro. And they were going to remand Ebby Thatcher to Brattleboro Insane Asylum to try to cure him of his alcoholism. Were that it were so simple. Were that it were so easy. Were that it worked. But it doesn't. And putting someone in the insane asylum is a horrible waste. If you treat them instead of locking them up and warehousing them, you'll get much further. But Bill hadn't told the world of what he had found yet. Bill hadn't shown the world what was going on yet. So let's get back to the book. He had consulted the best known American psychiatrists. That would be Freud and Adler, as I told you. Then he had gone to Europe, placing himself in the care of a celebrated physician, the psychiatrist, Dr. Jung. Once again, J does not exist in Swiss, in that. So it's a Y. It's treated as a Y in our language. I'm looking for something that I hope was on my desk, and I don't see it. Oh, there it is. Okay, fine. Okay. Who prescribed for him? Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. Jung will end up treating Roland Hazard for 1 year until autumn of 1932. 1 year. He will hospitalize Roland and he will visit him and treat him for a year. Above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. You see, this was one of the thinking, this was one of the prevailing thought, is that if we could get you sober and wise you up, make you smart instead of stupid. See, a lot of my friends think, I got smart instead of being stupid, and that doesn't work. That kind of thing, I didn't get smart. I had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. That's what happened to me. I didn't all of a sudden get smart. I got spiritual, and that is exactly what happened to me. Okay, now let's go further. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. I'll tell you exactly what happened when he got drunk. Roland This was happening at a time when Roland was in Switzerland, Geneva, Switzerland. And you couldn't fly like you, I mean, Lindbergh did, but it wasn't very common to fly across the Atlantic back to New York. At this time in the 1930s, and this is going to change because you're right up against the beginning of World War II, and that's going to change air travel forever. But at that time in the 30s, most people, not most, all people that went across the ocean went by ship. They went by boat. And Roland couldn't catch a ship to the States from Switzerland. He had to go to Paris. And from Paris, he could go on to the United States. Now he goes to Paris on a very, very beautiful Saturday afternoon, just like here in Arizona. It's going to be about 80 something degrees today. It is crisp, cooler than normal, just fabulous. And as I say every week, I hope it's as astounding where you are as it is in Arizona today. It's just astounding, just astounding. So he goes to Paris, and who does he run into? Now, this is the height of the Depression. Poor people didn't go to Paris during the height of the Depression, but his parents' friends were there, and he sees them, and they say, "Roland, my boy, haven't seen you in forever. What are you doing in Paris?" And he tells them of his trip to Paris to meet with Jung in Switzerland and sober up. And they say, "Oh, Roland, how long have you been here?" He says, "Well, I've been over here about a year." "Oh, Roland, we have to celebrate you us finding you." And how do they celebrate Roland's newfound sobriety? They celebrate it with a bottle of the best champagne money can buy. And in a very short time, Roland is drunk and unable to walk and unable to function at any level. He wakes up and he can't believe it. So he goes back to Dr. Jung in Switzerland. Let's find out what happens. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. I'm on page 26. End of the first paragraph. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fall. Roland didn't know about the twist of the mind. Roland didn't know about the mental blank spot. Roland didn't know about the physical allergy. He just knew that under Dr. Jung's care, he stayed sober because you can't get any liquor in the hospital. So he stayed sober and figures that the sobriety is attributable to the analysis that Jung put him through. Let's find out. So he returned to this doctor. He goes back to Switzerland, whom he admired, and asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well balanced with respect to other problems. In other words, Roland wasn't a schmo. He knew how to balance his checkbook. He knew how to put on his pants and his shoes and his shirt and wear his hat and his tie. He wasn't a complete loony or a moron. But when it came to liquor, he had no control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? Now, Jung didn't know as much about alcoholism as Silkworth. Jung didn't know about alcoholism and the allergy of the body and the twist of the mind. He just knew some historical facts. Let's find out what those facts are. Okay? He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. So the doctor, without knowing about alcohol, doesn't know Silkworth, doesn't know what Silkworth had been teaching, but he knows that the condition of alcoholism, based on his history with alcoholics, that Roland was utterly hopeless and there was no hope for him at all and there was nothing that could be done. Okay? So he could never regain his position in society and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the great physician's opinion. Now, do you remember what Dr. Silkworth told Lois Wilson? I'll refresh your memory. If you don't remember, I'm here to help you. And in Bill's story on page, I believe it's 7. Okay. Okay. On page 7, Dr. Silkworth is going to tell Lois Wilson, see these parallels? See how important it is for God to paint the picture? God paints us a picture by repeating things. He repeats things so we learn them, and that's called a spiraling the information. You teachers know what I'm talking about. He spirals the information. Let's go back to page 7 for just a second. Keep your hand on page 26, but we're going to go back to page 7, okay? And I'm going to say this. But it was not. See that paragraph near the bottom of the page? But it was not. Okay. For the frightful day came when I drank once more. We're talking about Bill now, not Roland, for just a second. The curve of the declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This is April of 34. Bill returns. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain. Perhaps within a year, she would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. Let's go back to page 26. So listen to what Dr. Silkworth is telling Lois. Now listen again in your mind. I don't want to read it again. He said to Dr. Jung is saying to Roland, there's no hope for you. We're going to have to put you under lock and key or you're going to die. Right? He tells him, if you expect to live long. This was the great physician's opinion because he had never seen a recovery affected before by anything except one thing. One thing that he was kind of holding in his mind. And this is why if you doubt now I'm not an atheist. I'm not an agnostic. And don't listen to my friend in the middle of the country that claims that she is, because she's not either. She's just angry at God. She's not either one either. Her faith in God could light up New York City, no problem. But what I'm going to tell you is I am not an atheist. But if you are, or you're an agnostic, you can apply whatever forces of nature you want to apply. My way is not the only way. But I'm not an atheist, so I can only present from my own perspective. God is so powerful, yet so anonymous, that this is occurring on the cusp of one of the greatest miracles to ever occur in the world anywhere at any time. Let's find out what it is, because God has put this together. Now, what am I referring to specifically? What Jung is telling Roland? No. But I want you to remember, because it's vital, in the next few paragraphs, it's vital to remember that sometimes God says no. And sometimes when God says no, it's the greatest miracle of them all. And God is not going to keep anything from you that he wants you to have. But the power of God is often subtle. Now, if Roland had got to Freud, Freud believed that all solution lie within the mind. Adler believed that all solution lie within the mind. Jung broke rank with them and believed that here and there, there are people who have had vital spiritual experiences that alter them in their thought, attitude, belief, and behavior. What is the difference between a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience? A spiritual awakening is like what I have every day. Slow, developing, educational. A spiritual experience is like what Bill had. God came to him. Bill talked about this his whole life. He was at the town's hospital, and God came in on the 15th of December, 1934, after Bill had worked the steps the day before, and the light came into the room, and Bill experiences this light, and it changed him forever, never to drink again. Well, let's see what Roland is going to hear from Dr. Jung that he never would have heard from Dr. Freud or Dr. Adler. Let's see why God thrust him all the way to Switzerland in search of these words. Let's go to the bottom of 26. But this man still lives and is a free man. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where other free men may go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. Now, what is that? What happened? Let's find out. Some of our alcoholic readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Let us tell you the rest of the conversation our friend had with his doctor. Before I say one more word, I need for me to say this. Ignore me if you need to. If you are an atheist, if you are an agnostic is someone who's not sure, they don't know, is there a God, is there not a God, they're not sure. An atheist is someone who believes there is no God, there is no religious deity. I don't want to give you the impression that I believe that without a belief in a theocracy, in a religious deity, that you can't recover. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the essence of step two here. Are you willing to believe? Do you believe, or are you willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself? Are you nature? Are you Lake Michigan? Are you the birth of a baby? Are you the wonderment of a forest or a sunset? Do you make fish eat bugs? No. No, you don't. And something does. Something does. So whatever it is that you believe or willing to believe is fine. That is sufficient for you to recover. So I need to say that because if I don't, I'm going to feel very bad tonight because I want to make sure that if you are an atheist, not you, and you know who you are not an atheist. I don't care what color headset you're wearing. You are not an atheist. You are not an agnostic. No, but if you are an atheist or if you are an agnostic, that's fine. Do you believe or are you willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself? And if you are, you will recover. Because if you believe that there is a power greater than yourself, then you will take action. How do you work steps 1, 2, and 3? You don't. They are conclusions of the mind. And if you've believed and you've conceived of step 1, that you are powerless over food and your life is unmanageable, and you come to believe that there is a power greater than yourself, which will restore you to sanity, which has a much higher ceiling than sobriety, then you will have no problem. And step three is make that decision to turn your will and life over. You'll have no problem doing 4 through 12 because you will understand in the root of your heart. The Yiddish word of the day is neshama. The neshama is your spirit, your holiness. Your gederim is your guts. Your gederim is your guts. Your neshama is your spirit, your holiness. Your inside, do you believe or are you willing to believe there is a power greater than yourself? And if you've got that right here, doing the work of this program is downhill. There's nothing here that is so difficult. If it's really difficult for you, you're probably doing it wrong. Find one of us and we will help you. There is nothing in this program that is so hard. Nothing. Just nothing. Go back to page 27. The doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. What does chronic mean? It means you do this all the time. Chronic drinker, chronic smoker, chronic gambler, chronic cough, chronic infection, chronic whatever. It just means it's all the time. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. This is Jung talking to his alcoholic patient, Roland. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. Now, this sentence is key. Highlight it. Remember it. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor. Yes, there is. Now, if he had, again, I hate to keep repeating this, but it's important that you know this because this is our history. This is how powerful God is. This is the essence of God's power. If he had gotten to his first choice, Freud, if he had gotten to his second choice, Adler, they believed that all solution lie within the mind. And we'd be sitting around in the meetings, psychoanalyzing ourselves. And in some meetings, sadly, that happens. But the truth is, let's read the next sentence and you'll see the truth. Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. A spiritual experience, what's that? Let's find out. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. What is a phenomenon? He knows that they're there, but he doesn't understand it. How does a butterfly fly out of a cocoon, out of a caterpillar? I don't know. I'm not an expert on insect. What do they call that? I think it's ichthyology or something like that. There's a name for the entomology or something like that. Entomology. Okay. An entomologist. Thank you. An entomologist is an expert in insects. And when I lived in Oregon, I used to do a lot of fly fishing. And some of these fly fishermen would actually go to the University of Oregon and audit classes on entomology so they could catch more fish because fish eat insects. Anyway, every day, except one day a week, I don't do it. But 6 days a week, I walk 3 miles. I don't know diddly squat. I don't know diddly squat about exercise physiology. I don't know diddly squat. And there's doctors on here and nurses on here and maybe trainers or whoever. They know everything about physical or exercise physiology. I just know that when I do it, I weigh less, I look better, and I feel better. I weigh less, I look better, and I feel better. I think I'll do it again tomorrow. It sounds like it's working to me. So I'm going to do it. But it's a phenomenon to me because I know it works, but I can't explain it to you. So that's what this phenomenon means. They appear, I'm on page 27. They appear to be in the nature of you. Now, before we read this next part, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, I want you to make note of how many times Jung will refer to the concept of change. Without saying the word change, let's see how many ways Jung can refer to change. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements, change, and rearrangements, change, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, change, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them. Change. Let's stop right there for just a second. How many times do we hear people in meetings, and we relate to this because it was us too, the brain that got them in trouble, they are hoping can get them out of this addiction. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. But the ego wants you to do this yourself on your own alone. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. So we have to change. And how many times have you heard me say this in the Q&A? If you want different, you got to do different. You want different, you got to do different. I hear person after person, like me, they're talking about being chronic relapsers. You don't want to be a chronic relapser? Don't be one. Put the food down, get a different sponsor, work the steps differently than you've ever worked them, quicker. Do things differently, but it starts with your attitude. You want different? You got to do different. Change. Dr. Jung is impressing upon Roland this conception of change. In fact, I have been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangement change within you. With many individuals, the methods which I employed are successful, but I have never been successful with an alcoholic of your description. For amplification, see Appendix 2. And we talked about that last week. Read Appendix 2 on your own. It tells you the difference between a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening. An experience is fast and sudden, and an awakening is slow. I had a slow one. Bill had a quick one. Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected that after all, he was a good church member. He didn't say have a religious experience. He said have a spiritual experience. Religion is great. I'm not knocking religion, but I'll let you in on a secret. God did not come to me in a synagogue. I tried. I went to Hebrew school. I went to Hebrew school 4 days a week, and I just didn't feel anything. What I felt was a sense that I had to be obedient and do certain things on certain days and say certain things in the morning and at night and so on, but I didn't feel anything. I came in here, I came to OA, and not only did God bring me to OA, but OA brought me to God. And because of my spiritual practices, not my religious practices, although my religious practices are fine, I'm not knocking them. I'm not denigrating them. All I'm saying is because of these practices, I never got closer to God. But the spiritual practices of sponsoring and step work and inventory, that's what imbued me with the spirit of God. That's what helps me recover every single moment of every single day. Every single moment of every single day. And I feel God with me. And I am humbled by his presence, not only in the world I see, but in the spirit that I occupy, my body, my mind, and my soul. I know he's here. I never have to doubt it. I may not serve him as well as I could. I may not serve him as well as I think I should, but I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best that I can. Okay, let's continue. This hope, however, was destroyed by the doctors telling him that while his religious convictions were very good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. Experience. So what Roland is going to have to do is, well, let's go to the top of page 28. He's going to have to take a look at what Dr. Jung is telling him. Here was the terrible dilemma in which our friend found himself when he had the extraordinary experience, which, as we have already told you, made him a free man. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. I have a vivid memory. I was in the pool at the Jewish Community Center in Chicago, not the one here in Arizona that I love so much, but the pool in Chicago. And for reasons which I don't remember, I stayed under the water a bit too long. A bit too long. Obviously, I didn't drown. The story has a happy ending. But I came up, and I had never been so happy to be out of the water in my life, because I was running out of air. I was running out of air. And I sucked in the air as hard as I could. And my head was like spinning around. And I remember it all my, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. And every one of us has had similar kinds of experiences. I didn't ask what color the life preserver was. I didn't get a life preserver, but you can just visualize an example. Let's say you're in the middle of an ocean or Lake Michigan. Somebody throws you a life preserver. You're desperate. Are you going to think to yourself, I don't want the Walmart life preserver. I want the Louis Vuitton life preserver. I don't want the Target life preserver. I want the Gucci life preserver. I don't want somebody should see I'm using a life preserver from Target. At that point, you won't care. You won't give a damn. You won't give a damn about anything but taking the next breath. So we have to have the desperation of drowning men. And when I try to work with somebody that I see is not desperate, that they really don't care, that I care more about their recovery than they do, that is the Al-Anonic condition in its active form. The Al-Anonic condition is, I care more about recovery for you than you. You got to have the desperation of drowning men. Let's continue. What seemed at first like a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. So at first you grasp it. You're not quite sure if it's going to hold you. And not only does it hold you, it holds every part of you. Your fears, your past, your future, your present, your anger, your selfishness, your joy, your love, your challenges. It holds everything, everything, and your recovery. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. What a beautiful promise. A new life has been given us. Anything that resembles my old life in the food is purely coincidental. Purely coincidental. The distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book, The Varieties of Religious Experience, indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. This is one of the books that is vital. There's four books that are vital to the big book. One is The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James. One is Emmett Fox, The Sermon on the Mount. One is the book of James in the New Testament. And the other one is the Richard Peabody's The Common Sense of Drinking. Those are the four books. I'll repeat them one more time. Richard Peabody, you don't need to know this, but if you want to, you can write it down. Richard Peabody, The Common Sense of Drinking. We're going to talk a lot more about that in the next chapter, because chapter three is almost all inspired by Richard Peabody. The book of James, New Testament, The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James, and the book by Emmett Fox called The Sermon on the Mount. And The Sermon on the Mount, The Common Sense of Drinking, the book of James, and what else? Oh, the what did I forget? The Varieties of Religious Experience. These four books are instrumental in the formation of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Very important. Okay. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Those having religious affiliations will find here nothing disturbing to their beliefs or ceremonies. There's no friction among us over such matters. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. This should be an entirely personal affair, which each one decides for himself in the light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. What is he telling you there? Whatever you believe or don't believe, whatever religion you are, whatever color you are, whatever persuasion, your preferences, your whatever it is you do, you want to do, you are welcome here. You are welcome here. This is a home for you. You are okay. Who you are, what you are is fine. You can start there. You can start right where you are. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify. Oh, wait, I did that. In the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism. We're going to get to that next week. As we understand it, then a chapter addressed to the agnostic, chapter four. Many who once were in this class are now among our members. Surprisingly enough, we find such convictions no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. That's chapter 5. 6. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. There's 42 stories in the back of the book. Used to be a little different, but now it's 42. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, "Yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing." No human power caused your compulsive overeating. It may appear to you that your mother did, or your dad, or your sister, or your husband, or your brother, or your wife. It may appear to you that if you had been wealthier, or if you had been another whatever, that everything would have been okay. That is an illusion. It is not true. The one who has everything is God. All the solutions is God. May you find him now. And the main object of this book, as we're going to find out in chapter 4, the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And my problem is me, ego, me. And when that problem is solved, I don't want to eat like I did. Now, am I giving you the impression that if you work these steps, you will never have another problem? No. No matter what happens in this world, you will never rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, you are going to be challenged by problems and difficulties and things that you will not like. That's why we have step 10. Because people are going to piss you off. Things are going to scare you. That's why we have 10. And that's why we have 4. And that's why we have all of it. But no matter what happens, you know where to plug in to that power in the universe, which is so important for your recovery. So if no earthly factor caused your disease, no earthly factor will alleviate it. Stop looking for solutions on earth. They do not exist. All solutions lie within the spiritual. All solutions lie within the spiritual. You are not going to get any earthly relief from this disease in money, power, prestige, sex, poverty, abstinence from sex, being married, being single, being tall, being short, being black, being white, being gay, being straight. It doesn't make a difference. We all need God. And in the finding of God, we achieve the knowledge of the language of the heart, that we speak and understand a language that no one else can understand. And it is indeed the language of the heart. You can learn to speak the language of the heart. And how do you learn to speak the language of the heart? Work your steps, go to meetings, and immerse yourself in this wonderful program. Now, before I turn this over back to you guys, I want to make a couple of points clear. If you'll notice, we're down in the summertime. In the winter, we're up to 180s. Now we're down to 120s. Because in the Eastern time zone and the Central time zone, people are out and about by this time. They want to do things. They have places to go. So we're going to change on June the 1st. Now, during May, we're not making any changes. During May, we're not making any changes. But on June the 1st, which is a Saturday, we are going to begin this meeting at 7:30 a.m. I hope I'm not cutting out some of the Israelis because of the Shabbos thing, and I hope that that's going to work out okay and so on. And I hope that all of you will continue to attend, but we have to make this change. So on June the 1st, 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. And I want to just make that clear. Now, before I turn anything over to, I'm going to turn this over to Diane, and Diane has another announcement. But before I do, I just want to remind you that in the questions and answers, please, if you asked a question last week, wait for a lull. I'm not saying don't ask one. wait for a lull. And the other thing I'm going to ask you is, please, let's not waste any time with food questions or math questions. No math and no food. No food, no math. Okay, Diane, you're up. We can't hear you. Let me see here. Ask to unmute. Okay. That should work.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much, Harlan. Good seeing everybody. Harlan, we do have a change happening in May. A huge hold on to your seats change in May. May 19th, for the first time ever, Harlan will be leading a sponsorship training webinar. May 19th, Sunday, 1 to 3. Yeah, shake it out there. Woo! 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern time. I put a PDF of the flyer in the chat. I wanted to do a PNG, a picture, but it wouldn't allow me to do it, to put it in there. Those of you who want to do service, you can reach out to me and Danny P. I'll put my info in the chat. It's all on the flyer. Mm-hmm. Again, first time ever, huge change. 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern time, Sunday, May 9th. Team. It'll be 1 hour of Harlan going lickety-split the way he does, talking about how to take sponsees through the steps, followed by 1 hour of Q&A. Bring your beach chairs, get into the Zoom room early so you don't get locked out when the Zoom room gets packed. Thanks, everybody, and thank you,
Thanks,
Harlan.
Diane. And keep an eye on Anne in New York. She's a bomber, and she'll bomb the meeting. And she's very addicted to putting her filth on the screen. And you got to keep an eye on her. She's the culprit.
And you know
she's
what,
definitely
Harlan,
the culprit.
As much as you'd like to think it was me who's been holding you at gunpoint all these months to do this, it was actually God holding the gun, and
probably.
I was just helping him. Okay.
Probably. Okay.
Thank you.
But keep an eye on Anne. Keep an eye on Anne. All right. Who's doing the parking
I am.
Oh, Nancy. Okay.